This is the NOCM ESOL International Proficient User Level C2 listening examination. Please check that your name and other details are on your mark sheet. The invigilator will have explained how to fill in the mark sheet. Do not write on your examination paper. Put your answers on the mark sheet. The listening examination will now begin. Part 1. You will hear 10 sentences. Read the replies on your examination paper. You have 2 minutes to read the replies on your examination paper. Listen to the sentences. You will hear the sentences in full twice. Choose the best reply for the situation. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
1. Recently, I've been coughing a lot. 2. He has a skill that few others have. 3. I wouldn't have done that if I were you. 4. What did you like about his character? 5. She's one of the richest people in the country. 6. I can't put up with this situation any longer. 7. I need to brush up on the violin. 8. Have you been to the new artisan bakery yet? 9. I should think he'll be here early. 10. I used to know a great restaurant in that part of town.
Now listen to the sentences again.
1. Recently, I've been coughing a lot. 2. He has a skill that few others have. 3. I wouldn't have done that if I were you. 4. What did you like about his character? 5. She's one of the richest people in the country. 6. I can't put up with this situation any longer. 7. I need to brush up on the violin. 8. Have you been to the new artisan bakery yet? 9. I should think he'll be here early. 10. I used to know a great restaurant in that part of town.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 2. Conversations. You will hear two conversations. Read the questions and answers on your examination paper for both conversations. You have 2 minutes to read them. Listen to conversation 1. You'll hear the conversation twice. Answer the questions. You'll then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Well, Mrs. Ferguson, it's time to find a holiday package that would best suit you and your husband. Have you had the time to look at your preferences?
To be honest, I can't decide. Personally, I'm drawn to the sophistication of a city break, wandering through historic quarters, visiting world-class galleries and sampling authentic cuisine. Yet my husband is keen on something more active, like trekking.
That is quite a contrast. A city break offers cultural enrichment and culinary excellence, whereas a more active itinerary caters to a sense of adventure and spontaneity.
Precisely. He fears a purely urban escape might feel a little structured. He isn't demanding an expedition across the Andes, but he would prefer something that engages him more physically. For my part, I'd like activity, in moderation, but I'm wary of an itinerary that becomes overly strenuous.
That's entirely understandable. Adventure doesn't have to equate to high-altitude ascents. Many destinations offer soft adventure, gentle walks, guided nature tours, or even wellness components alongside exploration.
That sounds promising. However, I'd be reluctant to forego the cultural immersion a city affords. Is there a destination that combines both?
Yes. Certain cities lend themselves to a hybrid itinerary. Cape Town, for instance, offers cosmopolitan vibrancy and fine dining, while simultaneously granting access to Table Mountain treks, vineyard tours, and even coastal safaris.
I see. Cape Town strikes me as a compelling compromise, rich in heritage yet surrounded by extraordinary landscapes. That way I can still indulge in the arts and gastronomy.
Perfect. It seems we've found an itinerary that meets both your interests. I'll begin arranging the details straight away.
Now listen to the conversation again.
Well, Mrs. Ferguson, it's time to find a holiday package that would best suit you and your husband. Have you had the time to look at your preferences?
To be honest, I can't decide. Personally, I'm drawn to the sophistication of a city break, wandering through historic quarters, visiting world-class galleries and sampling authentic cuisine. Yet my husband is keen on something more active, like trekking.
That is quite a contrast. A city break offers cultural enrichment and culinary excellence, whereas a more active itinerary caters to a sense of adventure and spontaneity.
Precisely. He fears a purely urban escape might feel a little structured. He isn't demanding an expedition across the Andes, but he would prefer something that engages him more physically. For my part, I'd like activity, in moderation, but I'm wary of an itinerary that becomes overly strenuous.
That's entirely understandable. Adventure doesn't have to equate to high-altitude ascents. Many destinations offer soft adventure, gentle walks, guided nature tours, or even wellness components alongside exploration.
That sounds promising. However, I'd be reluctant to forego the cultural immersion a city affords. Is there a destination that combines both?
Yes. Certain cities lend themselves to a hybrid itinerary. Cape Town, for instance, offers cosmopolitan vibrancy and fine dining, while simultaneously granting access to Table Mountain treks, vineyard tours, and even coastal safaris.
I see. Cape Town strikes me as a compelling compromise, rich in heritage yet surrounded by extraordinary landscapes. That way I can still indulge in the arts and gastronomy.
Perfect. It seems we've found an itinerary that meets both your interests. I'll begin arranging the details straight away.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 2. Conversations. Listen to conversation 2. You will hear the conversation twice. Answer the questions. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Right, Alex. I finally managed to download this app you were raving about. Now, can you enlighten me as to what I'm supposed to do next?
Brilliant. First step is account setup. Hit sign up, pop in your email, and the system will dispatch a verification link to your inbox. That's how it authenticates your identity.
Oh, goodness. You know I never remember my email password. Honestly, my brain's like a sieve these days.
Don't stress. We can initiate a reset in seconds. Once you've verified, you'll be prompted to create a password. The app enforces complexity rules. Minimum 8 characters, upper and lowercase letters, numerals, and ideally a symbol or two.
How about Fluffy 2017? That's memorable and it's got both letters and numbers.
Mum, that's what we call low entropy. Hackers could guess it in no time. Best to use a passphrase. Unrelated words strung together with digits. Maybe even a punctuation mark. So it's resistant to hackers' tricks.
That sounds impossible to remember. But all right, I'll strengthen it. Done. Now it's flashing something called two-factor authentication. Is that as complicated as it sounds?
Not at all. It's basically a safety net. If someone logs in from a new device, the app texts you a one-time code. It adds an extra layer beyond your password.
Fair enough. But now it's asking me for a selfie. And what's this pop-up about cookies? Why on earth would a photo and biscuits be relevant here?
Not biscuits, Mum. Cookies are tiny data files that store your preferences so the app runs seamlessly. And the selfie's just biometric authentication. Facial recognition lets you bypass typing the password every time.
Oh, I see. Well, it's efficient, even if I look half asleep in that picture.
Don't worry, it's not a glamour shot, just a digital identifier. Looks like you're all set.
Now listen to the conversation again.
Right, Alex. I finally managed to download this app you were raving about. Now, can you enlighten me as to what I'm supposed to do next?
Brilliant. First step is account setup. Hit sign up, pop in your email, and the system will dispatch a verification link to your inbox. That's how it authenticates your identity.
Oh, goodness. You know I never remember my email password. Honestly, my brain's like a sieve these days.
Don't stress. We can initiate a reset in seconds. Once you've verified, you'll be prompted to create a password. The app enforces complexity rules. Minimum 8 characters, upper and lowercase letters, numerals, and ideally a symbol or two.
How about Fluffy 2017? That's memorable and it's got both letters and numbers.
Mum, that's what we call low entropy. Hackers could guess it in no time. Best to use a passphrase. Unrelated words strung together with digits. Maybe even a punctuation mark. So it's resistant to hackers' tricks.
That sounds impossible to remember. But all right, I'll strengthen it. Done. Now it's flashing something called two-factor authentication. Is that as complicated as it sounds?
Not at all. It's basically a safety net. If someone logs in from a new device, the app texts you a one-time code. It adds an extra layer beyond your password.
Fair enough. But now it's asking me for a selfie. And what's this pop-up about cookies? Why on earth would a photo and biscuits be relevant here?
Not biscuits, Mum. Cookies are tiny data files that store your preferences so the app runs seamlessly. And the selfie's just biometric authentication. Facial recognition lets you bypass typing the password every time.
Oh, I see. Well, it's efficient, even if I look half asleep in that picture.
Don't worry, it's not a glamour shot, just a digital identifier. Looks like you're all set.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 3. Debate and discussion. You will now hear a debate and a discussion. You will hear them twice. You have 2 minutes to look at the questions for both the debate and the discussion. Now listen to the debate. You will hear it twice. Answer the questions. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Welcome to the show. Today we're talking about the rise of false information online and whether social media should face stricter rules. Joining me is journalist Daniel Lawson, who thinks more control might not be the right answer. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you. I agree, misinformation is a problem. But putting heavy limits on online content could backfire. People should have the opportunity to assess information for themselves, instead of having everything filtered for them.
Isn't that a bit optimistic? Studies show fake news spreads quickly and can affect health, safety and trust in society. Doesn't that mean we need some safeguarding controls in place?
The real issue is, who decides what's true? If one group controls what we can and can't see, it could lead to biased decisions.
But we already have laws against false advertising and harmful content. Why should social media be treated differently?
Social media is huge. Millions of posts every day. Trying to monitor all of it could be messy and go too far. Plus, history shows that some ideas called false at first were later proven true.
Still, some people spread lies on purpose for power or financial gain. Doesn't that mean we need at least some intervention?
Yes, intervention, but not censorship. A better long-term approach is teaching people how to spot false claims and understand how they're being misled. Being an educated user is better than having strict rules imposed.
So you're saying fake news is dangerous, but too much intervention could be even worse?
Exactly. It's a tough issue, but the best defence is a public that knows how to think critically. People need to be given the opportunity to learn how to navigate social media safely.
Thank you for a great debate.
Now listen to the debate again.
Welcome to the show. Today we're talking about the rise of false information online and whether social media should face stricter rules. Joining me is journalist Daniel Lawson, who thinks more control might not be the right answer. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you. I agree, misinformation is a problem. But putting heavy limits on online content could backfire. People should have the opportunity to assess information for themselves, instead of having everything filtered for them.
Isn't that a bit optimistic? Studies show fake news spreads quickly and can affect health, safety and trust in society. Doesn't that mean we need some safeguarding controls in place?
The real issue is, who decides what's true? If one group controls what we can and can't see, it could lead to biased decisions.
But we already have laws against false advertising and harmful content. Why should social media be treated differently?
Social media is huge. Millions of posts every day. Trying to monitor all of it could be messy and go too far. Plus, history shows that some ideas called false at first were later proven true.
Still, some people spread lies on purpose for power or financial gain. Doesn't that mean we need at least some intervention?
Yes, intervention, but not censorship. A better long-term approach is teaching people how to spot false claims and understand how they're being misled. Being an educated user is better than having strict rules imposed.
So you're saying fake news is dangerous, but too much intervention could be even worse?
Exactly. It's a tough issue, but the best defence is a public that knows how to think critically. People need to be given the opportunity to learn how to navigate social media safely.
Thank you for a great debate.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. Part 3. Debate and discussion. Listen to the discussion. You will hear it twice. Answer the questions. You will then have 2 minutes to check your answers.
Today, we turn our attention to CCTV and surveillance, particularly their role in public safety and traffic management. Sarah, you've worked with these systems. How do you see their impact on daily life?
Their impact is considerable. CCTV isn't limited to deterring crime. It also regulates traffic, alleviates congestion, and reduces accident risk. A large share of the UK's cameras are used for precisely that, optimising traffic flow through real-time monitoring.
I think the traffic aspect is often overlooked. At the same time, the increase of cameras makes some people uneasy. There's the sense of being constantly observed.
Understandably so. However, modern surveillance is designed more to help the police with operational duties and less to watch specific individuals. Statistics show that cameras help identify accidents more quickly, recalibrate traffic signals, or address traffic jams. The aim is functionality, not intrusive monitoring.
That said, there's still the issue of oversight. Even if the technology is well-intentioned, how do we guarantee the footage isn't misused? Or worse, compromised by cyber intrusion?
Excellent safeguards are in place. Data protection legislation governs access, retention periods are limited by law, and most footage is erased automatically. On the technical side, encryption protocols and network security make unauthorised access extremely difficult.
Okay. What interests me is people's perception. Do they feel safer with surveillance, or are they simply reminded of potential risks?
Surveys show that people are reassured when they see the cameras, and studies indicate measurable reductions in traffic violations and faster response times in emergencies.
Then we're in agreement. When proportionate and regulated, CCTV can both enhance safety and improve the flow of city life.
Now listen to the discussion again.
Today, we turn our attention to CCTV and surveillance, particularly their role in public safety and traffic management. Sarah, you've worked with these systems. How do you see their impact on daily life?
Their impact is considerable. CCTV isn't limited to deterring crime. It also regulates traffic, alleviates congestion, and reduces accident risk. A large share of the UK's cameras are used for precisely that, optimising traffic flow through real-time monitoring.
I think the traffic aspect is often overlooked. At the same time, the increase of cameras makes some people uneasy. There's the sense of being constantly observed.
Understandably so. However, modern surveillance is designed more to help the police with operational duties and less to watch specific individuals. Statistics show that cameras help identify accidents more quickly, recalibrate traffic signals, or address traffic jams. The aim is functionality, not intrusive monitoring.
That said, there's still the issue of oversight. Even if the technology is well-intentioned, how do we guarantee the footage isn't misused? Or worse, compromised by cyber intrusion?
Excellent safeguards are in place. Data protection legislation governs access, retention periods are limited by law, and most footage is erased automatically. On the technical side, encryption protocols and network security make unauthorised access extremely difficult.
Okay. What interests me is people's perception. Do they feel safer with surveillance, or are they simply reminded of potential risks?
Surveys show that people are reassured when they see the cameras, and studies indicate measurable reductions in traffic violations and faster response times in emergencies.
Then we're in agreement. When proportionate and regulated, CCTV can both enhance safety and improve the flow of city life.
Now check your answers. You have 2 minutes to check your answers. That is the end of the listening examination. Please check your mark sheet is completed correctly. Put your pens down. End of examination.